Good morning, everybody. Good morning, dear listeners. Welcome to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And yeah, it's the right time to thank the Twilight team and the fact that you are listening to Joshua Maponga, who is giving you content and context. He's quite a very interesting man, particularly when it comes to the new ways of thinking, the new ways of looking at things. So when you are listening to him, at first you'll be so confused, but you'll be able to understand why he is reasoning like that, particularly the African, way of doing things and the African way of looking at perspectives, particularly development, particularly the aspect of being. And one of the things that he stated is that, you know, there is something that is called the coloniality of mind, to say even after we indicated that we are independent for many years, we still operate the same way like those who oppressed us, because the system itself is very difficult to change. Although we are talking every day, the system itself is very difficult to change because it was made by people who thought 200 years ahead, and also those who thought that, you know, even if I'm not there, I can be able to maintain the status quo, or the system itself can be able to evolve and continue to protect me. But it's a matter of us to think. It's a matter of us to think, to say some of these things that we concentrate much on, some of these things that we call formality, are they really formality, or we are strengthening the system that does not have our interests, or the system itself that have, you know, oppressed our ancestors, and the system itself that, you know, put us down and took us 30 years back or 100 years back to look at in comparison to the first world. Yeah, it's the 8th of October, 2025, and we are progressing understandably throughout the week, and we have, you know, looking at the year of 2025, if it was a soccer match, we'll be going to extra time because we only have 1 month before December, 1 month before we call it a year. And, you know, time gone, it will never come back. 2025, we are going to look at it in the history of Namibia, and we are also going to see what have we done, and also what will 2026 looking like. And the aspect of things, life will never, although it is understood backward, it has to be lived forward. And the 2025 will never come back anymore. That's why when you look at COVID baby, for example, somebody just not many years ago, COVID baby, somebody who was born during COVID-19, particularly 2019-2020. These are already people who are starting formal school. Some of them, they are done with their daycare. Some of them are already starting with formal school. It looked like it was yesterday. But if you are asking an old man who is 70 years old and ask him what have happened actually all those 70 years, one of the things that he will tell you is that he can remember when he was a young boy, you know, heading cattle. But now, just in the blink of an eye, 70 years old. That's why they are indicating to you to say time is a very undefined concept. Depends on how you look at it, but is what you do with it. It's what you do with it. We all have enough time, but why other people make the most out of it? And this morning, like many other days, we are going to give you content and also context of economy, development, geopolitics, what is happening around the world, what is happening continentally, what is happening in the region of SADC, and indeed, what is happening in Namibia, and also, what is the discussion for today, what do we have on the table, and also, how can you contribute to the conversation? Because conversation matters, particularly this morning. And we are greeting you from your number one favorite radio station, number one talk radio station in Namibia, that is Eagle FM. This is a platform where we discuss issues, and we are indicating to you that when it comes to the Villager newspaper that you must always make sure that you read. It's coming out. It's coming out today. And make sure that you subscribe and make sure that you read, particularly if you are a researcher, you're an academician, and you are somebody who is interested in developmental affairs, because that is where you get where the world is going. That is where you get where the world is going. And yeah, we look at what is happening, happening around the world. Start with you know, one of the most debated, war in history of mankind, particularly in the 21st century. That is a war between this actually not even a war. It's a kind of a genocide, particularly when you look at the casualty of war, the modus operandi, the method that is being used, and also the parties involved. It was indicated that, you know, negotiations between Hamas and Israel government started. A negotiation between Hamas and Israel government started in Egypt. They started in Egypt, particularly the future of regarding the future of Gaza and Palestine. And you'll be able also to realize that you know, after every conflict there is always the aspect of coming on the table, because you have to come on the table and you also have to define your future together. Then you're asking yourself to say, why should people, why they did not start with negotiations before they go there? Because what you need to understand is that the definition of war in its sense is failure of diplomacy. There is a saying to say failure of diplomacy is the beginning of war. And after every war, people have to come on the table, because if you do not defeat your enemy entirely, or if you do not eliminate your enemy entirely, which is actually not the case anymore in a civilized world, you need to understand that even if you arrest somebody during the war, there are decorums, there are, you know, rules of engagement that you must adhere to, there are international laws that you must adhere to, and particularly making sure that those prisoners of war, they are treated with respect, and also they are also going to be used as an exchange after every peace deal. Because it's not correct when you come on the table, then you are saying now we are having peace, but you don't have any prisoner that you can present to say, I'm also have some of your valuable people. Because understand that war is not only the battleground. It's also war in other front, and also aspect of psychological warfare too, and diplomacy, another form of war, particularly professional diplomacy. You are still persuading. You are still negotiating. You are still fighting, although it's not a physical war. That's why we'll see after this negotiation, which is happening in Egypt. After this negotiation, which is happening in Egypt, what will be the terms and what will be the conditions? Because you may be able also to understand that war can be an economic, or in most cases, it's an economic burden. And when you look at the phrases such as war is a very expensive business to maintain. When you go and also look at the cost of war, either is between Russia and Ukraine, either is that 12-day exchange of rockets and drones between Iran and Israel, you'll be able to realize that one rocket from air defense can cost around $500,000. It's not Namibian dollars. It's not rents. It's US dollars. You'll be able to realize that when somebody sends you drones of 100 drones, and you have to respond not with 100 counter rockets, you have to respond with maybe 200, because some of them they are going to miss. And that is the economy. That is banks are bleeding. And you're also asking yourself to say, man, why can't this money be used to assist those who are in need? But the clever and strong countries who have experience in World War II, they do calculations. They take, their financial records, and they calculate to say, if I enter into this, so what is in for me, and how much I'm going to lose, and also how much I'm going to gain. Because you'll be surprised. Throughout the history of, from 20th century, from the first, the second world war, most powerful countries, they never went to direct war. Then you're asking yourself, and we'll get old without seeing that. We may have done our prediction to say at one point Russia and US, they are going to go hand in hand. Or China and US, they are going to go head to head. They are not going to do that, because they understand the economy of war, unless they can go through war through proxies. Because they understand the economy of war, and also they understand the cost. That is why they end up either in trade war or indirect war, or can be intimidation or psychological warfare, but they will never go hand in hand. Somebody, and I was also surprised to see Putin and Donald Trump sitting together and even in one car and calling each other an old friend. Here we were fighting each other to say, are you team USA or are you team Russia? But you need to understand that aspect to say, after every war, is diplomacy and also paving the way forward. So yeah, it's what's happening. It's what is happening in Egypt. It's happening in Egypt. But, let us look at the other news. There's also a very interesting news, actually, especially when you look at the history of technology and also governance. When you look at technology and when you look at governance, you may be able to see that in terms of data protection, it was indicated that, finally, Meta Platform Inc. Agreed to settle $32 million data privacy fine and with the Nigerian government. You know, Meta Platform, or Meta, is a parent company of Facebook. And also Instagram. And it was indicated that it was fined $32.8 million by Nigerian authority after, after it did not adhere to data privacy. It was indicated that the fine was imposed by Nigeria Data Protection Commission, that was in February 2025, for alleged violation of Nigerian Data Protection Act. Meta was also accused by Nigerian government of using Nigerian user data behavior, advertising without the consent of those Nigerians. Because remember, And you may also be able to have seen it. Sometimes, those who are expert in data analysis, particularly those bigger companies, you do not know that your data is currency. Your data is currency. When you post the food that you love, when you post the car that you drive, when you post, information about your personal information, your age, your birthday, you are celebrating every time. This digital platform, they have tools of analysis that they use. They can take your data. They can, analyze them. Then they can come up with a conclusion, because at the end of the day, if they understand your routine, they may be able to sell you a product without really knowing that, that your intention, but it's part of manipulation. It's part of manipulation because they are using your data without knowing. When you talk about this thing of cybersecurity, for example, cybercrime is not only about a person transferring money from your account without knowing, but a person stealing your data and your information. Imagine you have a certain disease, and it's your private, it's your private information. But somehow in your laptop, you save them, you save your medical history and all those things, and somebody stole those. And just out of the blue, somebody's selling you a certain medication for 25,000, for example, is curing and is answering to all your needs. And you, without knowing, you end up buying. But that is, even if that thing is not true, and that is, invading of data privacy, it was indicated that Nigerian government has summoned Meta Platform, especially the Data Protection Commission, and Meta agreed to say, no, this is, we understand, and we are going to pay, and we are not going to do it again. That is how authorities are working. But how many African governments can enter that platform? How many African governments can enter that platform to say, we are summoning Facebook, or we are summoning Google, or we are summoning an international company, which has its budget is even bigger than 20 African countries, for example, or 20 smaller countries. When you look at the budget and the operations of these companies, but at the end of the day, you must also be able to understand that authority is authority, and the issue of a sovereign state. Because you can be big as you are, but you cannot be bigger than the state, because the structure of governance is indicating to you that the state is a very powerful institution, and you can be very strong, but your tricks will not be better than your parents' tricks, because you must be able to understand that you are coming from that zone. But it's a win. It's a win for Nigeria. And it's a win for authority. And also to send a great message to say, Africans, we may look like we cannot see the direction, but we understand exactly what is going on. We understand exactly what is going on. And it's up to African governments also to learn from Nigeria, to say, how should I protect the data of my citizens? How should I protect the information of my citizens? How are my, Data Protection Act? And we have seen that in Namibia, issues of Data Protection Act has been on the table, and is something that we must use, not only to be on paper, but it's something that must be used and must be understood perfectly, to say, what do I mean when I speak about Data Protection Act, and what are the implications, and what are some of the crimes that are committed, especially on the ground of infiltrating my privacy, or on the ground of violating the privacy, particularly when it comes to information. Because with us, not not to say, not to say everybody, but with us, you find somebody who even his life is just an open cut. Information is just an open cut. Everything is out there. Documents are out there. Your CV is out there. Although this institution that we send applications to, we're supposed to protect it. But you find a dustbin full of personal information, ID, bank account, and you're asking yourself to say, but why, as in Namibia, we are not careful enough just to put our information out there, knowing exactly that there are those who are better than us in terms of using information, even just by using my ID number. Those who understand how the technological world is working can use that, just that one number, to commit all certain kinds of crime. But with what happened in Nigeria, I think it's the right move. So let us look at the commercial break. Then we'll look at this case again of Nigeria, especially when it comes to oil refinery, when it comes to Dangote oil refinery, and also what is happening there. Who is in charge? And what's happening with the strike at that refinery? Is it a sabotage, or is it what it is? Is it what it is, and what is the cost in terms of money, and also the future of a refinery in Africa? And remember, Aricon Dangote has been making you know, positive news, especially when it comes to oil, you know, refining, oil exploration, and also take a center stage in oil deals, not only in Africa, but also in the Western world. So men who sell oil and also refining them, and not necessarily just oil, but oil product too. But yeah, let us look at short commercial break, then we can continue with the Early Morning Scoop.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura, and I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalaiti.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store. Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions, see the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app, here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsi Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Here, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-238-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Join us every weekday for the Twilight between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. where we discuss various ways on how we can develop our country. The Twilight, before the sun comes out.
Ripurane ngelo wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe utete okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana. Konongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka. Okone ushe ndife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM.
Eagle FM, let's you express.
Yeah, we are moving forward. We are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And looking at Nigeria, apart from data protection, it was indicated that Nigeria has lost over 600,000 barrels of oil after 3-day nationwide strike over mass layoff at Dangote refinery. And it has disrupted the production, and this was confirmed by Nigeria National Petroleum Company. And it's something that we need to look at. It's a union versus Dangote management. It's a union versus Dangote management. And there was a strike, was a protest. And that have caused, the protest over 800 refinery workers who were dismissed. And it was also based on the aspect of unionizing, when you have a union involved, and you also have, management of Dangote, you can be able also to see that this is what has been happening. And it was stated that Nigerian Union nationwide strike threatened to stop the oil supply in Nigeria, and it's known as an industrial risk. It was stated that before the dispute, the output of Dangote refinery was 1.68 million barrels per day. That was from August, and there have been active drilling too. And also, in terms of trade, this oil refinery, or the biggest oil refinery in Africa, actually, led by the richest men in Africa, this Aliko Dangote. So now under dispute due to strike, and just also to look at that context to say, is it really the management of the refinery or there is something behind that, or there is a competition behind that. Because remember, Dangote disrupted the system, because the business of oil, the business of oil is few black people, apart from middlemen and consultants, few black people who own that, or who are part of that industry, because it's mostly with either the Western, bigger companies, or those that we know from Europe or from the Middle East, particularly in the area of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Oman, and many other countries in the Middle East there. That is where you find those wealthy men who own that industry. But it's also a question of asking beyond what we see to say what really happened. What really happened? And where was what really happened? Is it a professional industrial strike? And what happened to these 800 people to lose their jobs? And also, what is the future of oil refinery in Nigeria and in Africa too? Because it's also a question of us asking ourselves to say, why those who are progressing, particularly in Africa, they are faced with a lot of unexpected challenges, and what could be the real cause of what happened? What could be the real cause of that? What could be the real cause of that? And also, how is this going to impact? How is this going to impact the whole trade of oil? It's Nigeria is also one of the countries which is trying to make a name for itself, although it has already established itself. But what is the future of Dangote's oil, and also the future of Africa too? Because we have been indicating, when it comes to oil, even in Namibia, when it comes to oil, oil is one of the commodity that you could not, live without, especially when it comes to logistics, and also when it comes to, other products, because it's not only about calf oil, it's also oil that can be used in machines. It's also materials for road constructions and gas too. But that is a debate of another day. So before we go to the conversation for today, because today we are going to look at the G20 agenda, what is in for us? Because today we are going to look at the G20, which will happen next month in South Africa, because they are saying in an African tradition, if the neighbor has a wedding, you don't need the proper invitation. You can already smell, the scent of good food. And, it's also your benefit. And, what can you get from there? Because, we cannot have G20 happening in our neighborhood. And we cannot take a positive average on that, either is in terms of business or in terms of learning from what others are doing. Are we attending? Are we not attending? And or other things. But also the very important thing is also to look at what is in that agenda. What is in that agenda? But before we go there, let us look at this news of DRC. It was indicated that the military court of DRC convict 23 people over collaboration with allied democratic force, over the collaboration of allied democratic force. It's a group of rebels, and we are going to see what will happen. What will happen after this? These are very young men. These are very, very young men, the youth of DRC. when you look at international news, when you look at international news, you'll be able also to see that these who are convicted are very young. Very young people. And you're also asking to say, is this another example of what have happened at the Nubank trials. Because remember that after the Second World War, the war did not just end, but those who were on the losing side were also prosecuted. And we also prosecuted, and those particularly who were working with Nazi, they were executed. They were executed. People were killed there, and the history do not speak about that. History do not speak about that because after the war, those who were found guilty, especially the generals from Nazi. And these are the history that people do not speak about to say, what is the impact of revenge after war, to the people themselves, and also, to everybody who was involved there. But, let us look at, this news before we go to what we have on the table, before we go to what we have on the table today.
In Democratic Republic of Congo, the Beni Garrison Military Court handed down its verdict on Monday evening after 2 weeks of an intense trial in a case of collaboration with the Allied Democratic Forces. 23 people received sentences ranging from 5 to 20 years of penal servitude for charges of participation in an insurrectionary movement, criminal conspiracy, as well as financing and carrying out acts of terrorism. In application of Article 7 of the Military Criminal Code, sentences the defendant to the maximum penalty of 20 years of penal servitude. The defendant Mumbere is sentenced to 20 years of penal servitude for terrorism and another 20 years for participating in an insurrectionary movement. In application of Article 7 of the Military Criminal Code, the most severe sentence is imposed. The defendants were found guilty of directly participating in or providing logistical and financial support for attacks carried out by the ADF in the territories of Beni, Lubero and Ituri. The ADF is an armed group affiliated with the Islamic State. Defense lawyers have already announced their intention to appeal the verdict. Where we find that something is not right, we will appeal, especially since the law provides for 2 degrees of jurisdiction. It is our right. When we are not satisfied with the outcome for one of our clients, we will refer the case to a higher court to continue the proceedings. For local civil society, this trial marks a turning point in the fight against the Allied Democratic Forces. This verdict comes amid a context of extreme violence after ADF rebels killed around 100 people in Toyo in early September. This event highlights the resurgence of ADF attacks in the eastern provinces of Ituri and North Kivu.
Yeah, that is what is happening. That is what is happening in Democratic Republic of Congo. It is what is happening in DRC. And somebody may want to ask what is the neutrality of a military court, particularly in the war-torn country.
Do you ever wonder why we have so many road rules? Like, don't jaywalk, don't drink and drive, don't drive with underinflated tires, and don't speed. It's because we don't want you to put your life at risk. Don't become a statistic. Don't become a headline. Be a responsible road user. Do the right thing and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Back your preconceptions of...
Yeah, that is what is happening. That is what's happening in in DRC, and there is a news here on Ethiopian Prime Minister who launched pass of Africa media platform Pulse of Africa media platform. That is, it's a continental or pan-African digital media platform. That is Pulse of Africa. It's an important step toward countering negative media representation of Africa, asserting the agency of shaping Africans' own narrative, and also to look at what is happening in Africa. And looking at the Pulse of Africa, or Pan-African Digital Media, the Ethiopian Prime Minister indicating that there have been negative news, particularly when it comes to Africa, because in some cases, you look at some of the international media, and they are still prescribing, or they are still defining Africa as a forest, still defining Africa as a forest. And when you look at the perspective of some people, particularly in the outside world, outside Africa, when they look at Africa, as one country, they look at Africa as a forest, and they are given a picture of the Africa of 1920. Yeah, a picture of the Africa of 1920. And some are even surprised that there are Wi-Fi is in Africa. I'm even surprised, and you can only see this when you interact with somebody from outside, and they like having a conversation, particularly with either it's a youth from either US or UK, even Asia, who come to Namibia, ask, what were you thinking about Namibia before you come to Namibia? And you'll be surprised, because what is presented out there, you may think that there are open information out there, but we'll be surprised what you think. And most of the news that people see in their platform is the Africa that is Africa of war, Africa of backwardness, and also the Africa that that is still trying to find itself, the Africa that is still primitive. But that give a bad picture. That is giving a bad picture, especially when it comes to interaction with Africa, and also Africa having a stage in a global platform. Because if somebody is not speaking well about you, or when somebody is not acknowledging the effort that you are putting on, because it's not all bad in Africa. It's not all bad in Africa, and there are things that are here that you cannot find anywhere in the world. There are things that are here that you cannot find anywhere in the world, especially when it's coming to the maintenance of the environment, the maintenance of the environment and nature. Some people are coming to Africa just to look at the blue sky, because when you look at the other countries, there are no blue skies. They have poisoned their atmosphere. They cannot breathe properly. That's why you see a lot of people are running to Africa. But to put into that context, the platform that was launched, especially the Pan-African or PAS Africa, it's a platform, it's a digital media, or it's a Pan-African media that aim to narrate African perspectives, and also to put out stories out there, especially when it comes to Africa, created our own story. Also telling our own story, because if you rely too much on the external world, somebody will just come and advise you to say, this is what you need to do. And just ask yourself, which continent got the most of technical and developmental advice since 1960s? Which aspect, which continent was, studied for quite a very long time from all the sector, and which government since 1960 got a lot of external advices, external assistance since 1960s. And what is the impact of those to the continent? That is Africa. No, do this, do that, don't do this, do this, do that. This is the education platform. This is the medication. This is the medicine. Little did you know that when somebody is giving us medicine, is creating a business. Then it become the part of life. No, this one you can take. If you don't have medicine, you don't have a secure. But Little did you know that it's a dependency card which is being played. That's why we panic so much when we realize that when you go to Katutura Hospital, when you go to Central Hospital, when you go to Wananjokwe, when you go to Shakati Hospital, Engera, and wherever you go, then you look at the storeroom, and the doctor is panicking to say, no, there's not enough medicine, and people start panicking. But the question that you're asking yourself is that, what are you saying when you're saying there's not enough medication? When you say there's not enough medication, it means that the supplier does not have, or we are not giving money to the supplier yet, because medicine and many other created platform. They were created because we thought the external world was here to save us. But in actual sense, we have to save ourselves. Either liberate our mind in terms of thinking or become better negotiators. And also, not only being an observers, but also be people that take a center stage and have confidence when you are in those, rooms. Have confidence when you are interacting with the external world. That's why that platform was created, the Pan-African Digital Media Platform. And we see, particularly when it comes to documenting the stories of Africa. And if you want to get this correctly, ask yourself this question. Give a perspective, for example, of the case of corruption. Look at Fisherot, for example. Then look at the media house that brought this into light. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying look at the timing of the documentary, and also look at people who were pointed out. But if you are thinking that very correctly, to say who play a major role in corrupting the African people, who played the major, who is the mastermind of that? It's not James Atukulipi. Somebody gave an offer, somebody from the outside, somebody who was giving people money, who was paying people. And why that is not coming out? And the picture is there that African or Namibians are corrupt. But who was tempting them? If you are just thinking like that, who was the main beneficiary of Namibian Fisherot? It's not Namibians. But the way the story came out, it's like it's us. Namibians are just getting peanuts. Even when you look at calculations, the money that we see, that is peanut. Somebody benefited more, maybe 45 times than what we see. But because the narrative is there to say Africans are corrupt, Africans, they do what, we end up blaming ourselves. But sometimes the picture is being painted that we cannot be able to see. But maybe this is a platform to tell our own story, to say when you are saying this Fisherot case, who was the main beneficiary of that? And it's not only that, it's also the picture of narrative, and also the picture of information sharing. But yeah, that is the conversation. But before we go there, it's also quite important. It's quite important to look at what is that we have in the Villager newspaper today. What is that that we have in the Villager newspaper today? Because it's for you, not to be thirsty when it comes to economic knowledge, and also for you not to be thirsty when it's coming to developmental news. That is why we are always giving you the content to say what is that we have in the Villager newspaper today. Maybe looking at The Villager newspaper for today, especially looking at key topics that you need to know. You also to look at farmers called to be equipped with the latest technology. There's an article on farming and advancement in terms of technology, because now farming is not only about cultivating the land. It's not only about cultivating the land, but it's beyond that. Farming in nowadays, you cannot outcompete the market if you do not have advanced machine, if you do not have technological pest controls, and you also do not have latest seeds, latest cultivating method. And you can also be able to see that if you go to greenhouses now, you can also be able to see that there are also systems which are controlling the temperature. You already know that you don't only depend on the external weather, but you can control the environment actually, where and you can make it suitable for what the products or the crops that you are growing or the vegetables that you are growing need. And yeah, there is an article about Zimbabwe being praised for its economic recovery, and we discussed about it. But there is that article written into details to say, when you are saying Zimbabwe is praised on its economic recovery, at what percentage, who is benefiting, what sector. What sector, and also who is a beneficiary of that that development. And looking into that, you can also be able to see how much money Zimbabwe have lost, how much money Zimbabwe have lost since 2001, and also what were some of the main challenges out there that have led to Zimbabwe to lose that amount of money. But what are some of the key sectors, what are some of the key industries which are pushing, and when Zimbabwe is recovering, it's recovering at what percentage? But you can go into the Villager newspaper and you can be able to get that article and read it yourself, and you get perspective, and you can also get a picture on where we are coming from as Africa and where we are going. Yeah. And there is also in terms of sport, it's also on netball turning professional, professional. Get to those who sport enthusiast be able to see that when it comes to sport, especially netball, where are we standing? Where are we standing? And what is the area of professionalizing that that sport? You can also look at sport investment to say, if you are a professional netball player, how much can you be able to make? And also in that context, how can this being professionalized? Because we are yet to see in Namibia an independent footballer to say, my job is playing soccer, just a soccer player. Apart from Peter Sharure, Dion Hotto, and few others who got international or continental gigs and play with bigger football teams, I want to see, we still have to see somebody who say, I'm just a boxer, or I am a boxer, I'm a professional boxer, and I depend on that. That is where I pay, I pay my bills. That is where I do my investment. That is how I send my kids to school. And, that is how I buy my properties. Because, there's one boxer who at one point, now he's an upcoming boxer. He's winning titles. And I met this guy, not long ago. I was driving a taxi and we have a discussion. He said, "Oh, David, I'm coming from the gym I'm a taxi driver, but I have aim to be a professional boxer one day. But when you are looking at him now, it's quite a man with a good history. But just to say that when it's coming to Namibia sport, or Namibia areas of sport, are we walking the talk? To ask to say, are we walking the talk? To what extent is sport courts in Namibia professionalized? To what extent are professionalized? And also, how can Namibian sport professional or Namibian athletes are surviving? Are they only surviving on tournaments? How are they getting sponsors? And also, how are they, you know, valuing the, how are they valuing the profession? Because if you look on the past 20 years or so, look at how many World Cups have been there, how many Namibian, you know, trials, how many World Cup qualifiers, games that we played, and have you ever went to World Cup in terms of, you know, in terms of soccer? I'm still trying to find those records to say, was there a point in history of life that Namibia went to World Cup, and how close were we? And you also ask yourself to say, was there any point in time that Namibia went to any semi-final in African Cup of Nations, even the round of 16? Just to ask it, that was there any point? What would be some of the barrier? Is it really that we are not very good at playing soccer, or we are not putting our 100% investment in that? We are not putting our 110%, you know, focus on that, or because people are distracted, they are looking at other platform to say, the person is a police officer, but after the shift he has to go and train because of the standard. But what are we going to see? Since now sport is professionalized and those who are expert in sport will be able also to expand on that. But yeah, when you look again on top of the Villager newspaper, you can be able to see, the issues of credit rating agencies not yielding continental analyst. Not being able to be, you know, not be able to be on credit rating agencies. And something that we need to look at. And when you look at another article, it's also looking at ministerial updates. Look at ministerial updates on standing committee on youth interventions, on youth interventions. What are other things that we have done, particularly when it's coming to youth interventions in education, and also what is the report saying? And it's quite very important also to look at where are we in terms of our education. Where are we in terms of our education? And what are some of the progress that we have done so far? So that is something that you need to look at. And you will also be surprised. Also be surprised to say, when you read the Villager newspaper, it's not only about, it's not only on articles, not only on economic content, but you'll be able also to see, particularly the page of International University of Management, And you also be able also to see that when you look at institutions such as Vervice, I've always been telling people to say, now in Namibia, if you want to be a professional lawyer, if you want to be an admitted lawyer, you don't only need to go to one institution. Because in those years, all the lawyers that studied in Namibia, they were only going to UNAM. especially looking at the LLB program, particularly if you want to be an admitted lawyer, although there are other short courses of legal profession. But now Felvicha University is giving an LLB, full LLB degree. From there, you are just going to write your bar exam. Then you become an admitted lawyer. Then you start, you know, practicing law. And in many other fields, in many other fields, not only to go to court, because most of people, when they look at the lawyer, they think they look at the black gowns and they look at standing in front of a judge. But you can be a lawyer without being in court. You can work in other fields. You can work in business. You can be a legal advisor. You can be a trade negotiator. You can be a legal researcher. You can also work in issues of legal analysis, legal research, issues of drafting. And what is very interesting is also that every aspect, there is a law in it. Every field, there is a law in it. Every area, there is, you know, legal procedures which need to be followed. That's why with Felvicha University, and you can only get that when you read the Viraja newspaper, and you can also be able to see on that that ground. So let us look at the commercial break. Then you look at what is that that we have for today, especially when it comes to the G20. What is that that we have for today?
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are the Elsie Nehangano, the Osherero Omaimburiro, the Catholic Simane Kakarunga, the Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi senawa nukumona oijabo ili nawa ninge fata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom.
Yeah, we are moving forward with Early Morning Scoop with me, David Chombe. And today we are looking at the G20, which is approaching. G20, which is... Independence Week is approaching, and it's going to happen in November. It's going to happen in November. It's going to be hosted in South Africa, and maybe just before we go to what will be in for Namibia, what will be in for Namibia, because so it's a saying to say, when they say, when there's a wedding at the neighbor's house, don't need the formal invitation. You don't need the formal invitation. But let us look at, short history of G20, and also to see that, what are they looking at and what is on the table, especially, when it comes to November, 2025. Where, it's going to be hosted in South Africa. And, you'll be able to realize that, the G20 started in the early 2000, started in 1999. And, it just started as, you know, not really a formal, it was an informal summit of, you know, central banks, you know, governors, finance ministers, until, to the extent of, you know, incorporating, the aspect of, economic development of, advanced, countries, aspect of, economic development of advanced countries. And, it has, countries which, are advanced and also emerging, economies. That is where you have countries such as Brazil, you have United States of America, you have China, you have Japan, you have Mexico, Russia, you have Canada, India, Indonesia, Italy, South Korea, and and also, you have two critical bodies, such as European Union, and you have African Union. Now, when you look at the G20, the composition of a G20, it looks like it's smaller than the UNGA. But the question that you want to ask yourself is that, who is not represented at G20? Because if you ask yourself that question to say, who is not represented at G20? Then you'll be able to realize that, it's another, very important summit, just like, you have, UNGA. Because if you look at, European Union, that is the interest of, the whole Europe. That is, when you look at, the interest of European Union, that is the interest of, the whole Europe. If you speak about Asia, then you speak, there is no way you speak about Asia without speaking about Russia, China, and you speak about India. And when you speak about AU, that is Africa. Then when you speak about Southern America, that is Brazil. Let us look at commercial break, then we move forward.
When life gifts you an unexpected breakdown, take control with Express Credit. No need to panic when you're in the driver's seat of your financial life. Borrow 3,000 to 32,000 Namibian dollars, repayable over 2 to 5 months. Same day approval. Visit www.expresscredit.com.na or call 081-9500-500 for more information.
Yeah, we are looking at G20, and we are going to ask questions to say, what is in for Namibia? What is in for Namibia? And we're indicating that when you speak about G20 summit that will happen in November, hosted by South Africa as a presidency, and also going to transfer power to United States of America, one will also be able to see that that is almost the same as another United Nations General Assembly in its form. It's happening in Africa, and we are expecting world leaders to come and show up. We are also expecting, you know, even the UN Secretary General. And the question also that we are asking, who is going to come from Russia? Are they going to send the foreign minister, or Putin is coming? They're going to send the foreign minister, or Putin is coming? And also, do we expect Xi Jinping to come to South Africa? Because remember, apart from having a G20 summit, there are other summits of similar, you know, calibers, such as the Shanghai Cooperation Summit. Then you also had BRICS. Then many other summits. But the question is that how can Namibia, as a small country in Africa, and a neighbor of South Africa, benefit from this summit? What will be those direct and indirect benefits that Namibia would get? Before we come to that, let us look at key priorities, what will be discussed in the summit, because everything is set, the agenda is set, everything is on paper, and we are just waiting to see how coordination of the summit going to be, and also how people going to be engaged in that aspect, and what will be the outcome, because the outcome of G20 summit will also have a direct and indirect impact on our development, and also will create new perspective, especially looking at the future, because this is a summit which is happening during a very difficult, or during a very a world where it's most of the things are at stake, either it's peace or it's economy, either it's issues of governance, either it's issues of climate, and many other aspects that the world is looking at. And you also need to realize that France also so it's going to be here. But we are yet to see discussion, especially point number four. Of critical minerals. But number one, whether what is going to be key priorities in G20 is strengthening of disaster risk management and disaster resilience and response. That is from a national perspective. How are these countries going to share skills and technical know-how, particularly when it comes to responding to disasters? Because that conversation, they will not only speak about disasters of flood, but they will speak about disasters of member state of countries which are, living, or country which are member state of G20. Either is flood, either is volcano, either is earthquake, either is many other things to say. What are the capabilities of, disaster, resilience and response, and what are the preparedness of these G20 countries, and what are those things that they are going to come up with, and how are they going to share resources and technical know-how? And just when you are at that key priorities, and you look at disaster response, and you look at Namibia, you can also see to say, when the neighbors are going to discuss, are we also going to be there as a guest? And even if you are not going to be there as a guest, what are we going to learn from such a very great, summit that will be at our neighbor? In terms of putting this into perspective, one must be able also to see and also acknowledge the fact that when it's coming to disaster resilience and response, in Namibia, we are not that fast. We don't have a good pace when it comes to disaster risk response. And I think it's also quite to be a very interesting conversation to see how can we learn. Because if you look at the way we respond to flood, the way we prepare the way we prepare for risk response, the way we plan our buildings. Look at the town of Shakati. I'm yet to see the day where we are flood and we are not having flooded residents, especially in Oshakati. And I'm yet to see to say what do people do, especially during dry seasons. And it's only during dry season that people are going to run, people are going to update each other, and also people are going also to run around and also look for how they can respond in that aspect. How prepared are we in terms of risk response? And even looking at the recent event of Etosha, one of the great heritage of Namibia that is the pride of Namibia, actually, especially a key player in tourism attraction and also maintaining of Namibian history. Because it's not only about money, it's also about our resources, our animals, and our pride. But looking at what have happened, especially with the disaster which happened last week of fire, which burned, we are still waiting for statistics. And that is also actually one thing that is very dangerous, particularly when it's coming to maintaining of our natural resources. Because if up to now, although there is a response from the Minister of Environment, which is quite understandable, but one must also be able to say that where are the clear statistics on how many animals have we lost, how many vegetation was destroyed, at what cost, what are the things that need to be done? Because at the end of the day, if we speak about disaster risk management, if we speak about disaster response, we must be able also to see if this have happened in Etosha, was it the first time? It was not the first time, but was it the most devastating time? Yes, it was the most devastating time. What is the response in terms of that aspect? Do we have a fire brigade nearby? How trained are the people in terms of disaster or in terms of risk management? But that is just one of to see that the G20 countries are going to look at that. G20 countries are going to look at that. But what can we also learn from that as Namibians? And yeah, the other priority is debt sustainability. That is one of the priorities that is going to be discussed in the G20. And when it comes to debt sustainability and also taking actions to ensure that debt sustainability or debt servicing, especially to low-income countries, because looking at the way the world is, even the powerful countries are struggling with debts, and also how do countries manage their debts. And so looking at, it's not only South Africa, which has been, although growing, although still a key player in the economy of SADC Africa and the whole world, still dealing with their own problems of debt sustainability. And if you want to see this very correctly, you may be able also not to forget, just go back to March there, especially when South Africa have to send the Minister of Finance back two times before the passing of national budget due to disagreement, particularly when it's come to increment of tax. Because not only South Africa, not only Namibia, but countries are struggling to service their debts, especially coming up with a budget that does not have resources out there. Because remember, one thing that we need to look at is that when these G20 countries are coming to meet, they are also going to discuss the issues of debt sustainability, to say in any point in time, the needs of the people in any point in time what the state needs always, or in most cases actually, always outperform what is in the government coffer at that point in time. Because let us give an example of Namibia. When Meme Erika Shafuda presented the national budget in Namibian parliament, that is a budget of 106 billion Namibian dollars, and define and explain the budget fragmentation, where, at what sector, you must be able to realize that just after a few, not even weeks, there was a borrowing plan presented by Bank of Namibia to say, in supplementing or in realizing this budget, this is, this is how we are going to do it, because in realizing this budget, there is also what we are going to borrow. But is it not the first time, and it's not only in Namibia, but the discussion is that how are we going to manage the national budget, and that is going to be the discussion of G20. And what are we going to learn as we are at the window listening to the elders talking? But also what is very interesting is also that we are not just at the window, but we are also there 1 feet, because AU is there. When AU is there, it's also like Namibia is there. It may look like it's something which is very far, but it's something that we must take lesson on. We must take lesson on, because when the elders are discussing, we must also take lessons, because when the problem is being dealt with those who are with advanced economy, you must also be able to learn, because it will come to you, it will come to you, or you are still struggling with it. And the other controversial thing is just energy transition, mobilizing finance to support just and fair energy transition. And I cannot wait to look at the just energy transition. Cannot wait to look at the debate on climate. Cannot wait to listen to the position of the U.S. South Africa, France, and also EU representative, because when you look at the just energy transition, and you also look at the debate about climate change, you will be able to realize that some of the things that we discuss about, and when you compare with statistics, when you look at where the world is going, particularly when it's coming to green energy, you must be able to realize that Africa, we are not actually the problem. We're even supposed to continue, if I have to put it that way, using all sorts of energy to develop our state, because when it comes to the global problems of what scientists are saying, Africa contribute almost to nothing, particularly when it's coming to greenhouse gases. But who is suffering? Who is suffering in that aspect? It's still Africa, because other countries are telling us to say, let us not use this part of energy. Let us not use nuclear energy. Let us not use coal, because they are very dirty and all these things. But when you're asking yourself to say, the impact of climate that you have now in Namibia, the impact of climate that caused drought last year, was it really a contribution of Namibia to the global to the change in the weather pattern? Was it really Namibian contribution? Because that's going to be a very interesting debate. And at point number four, because remember, you have key priorities. Because it's a global summit, you have key priorities that everybody's going to touch it. And you have also other priorities in the agenda. And remember, you are also not only going to have one meeting. You're also going to have bilateral meetings where countries are meeting one-on-one, where agreements are going to be also signed. But the other, at the center of that is critical minerals, harnessing the potential of critical minerals for inclusive development. This, we are also sharing commonalities with the G20 countries, because when it comes to harnessing of potential critical minerals and for inclusive economic growth and sustainable development, Namibia here, what is in for us? That discussion is going to be relevant for us. And we are also yet to see the outcome of the G20 summit and what will be African position. Because when it comes to African position in harnessing of critical minerals, we are not speaking with one voice. We are actually not speaking with one voice, because in line with critical minerals, when you look at the world mineral composition, there's a state to say over 30% of the world minerals are coming from Africa. And over 30% of that minerals are coming from Africa. And there are records and key, minerals that are only found in Africa. And majority of that are found in developing countries. If you look at cobalt, for example, the other day we were speaking about cobalt, mineral, especially from DRC, contributing 70% of the whole world cobalt. When you look at uranium, we are at number 3 in the world in terms of production. When you look at coltan and many other critical minerals, then the question that always been asked is harnessing of critical minerals for inclusive economic growth. How is that discussion going to be? And what is our position, and what is that that we are keen to learn? And what is that we are doing toward moving at that priorities? Because in simple terms, when you look at four key priorities of G20, be able so to say that these are not only priorities of G20, these are things that every country is suffering with. And I want us also to ask a question to say, we spoke enough about minerals, we spoke enough about value addition. And I still want to ask this question to say, have we made one inch, or have we moved either in terms of drafting of that policy, or either in terms of starting, or we are still at the talking stage? Because that is a question that we should continue asking ourselves, to say those who are directed, when the president communicated that, those who are in that sector, what have they done? Especially when the president say mineral beneficiation or value addition to our mineral resources, that is a command, is a direction. But those who are at that sector, what have they done? Or they are still waiting for the president to come and ask them question, to say, colleagues, where are you? We still have to ask those questions, because a leader has communicated. A leader has already communicated to say, this is where we are going. But at what pace are we moving into? And if you are measuring the pace, because there is always something that is being brought up to say, give a person time, there is still enough time, give a person time. But okay, if I have to give you now enough time, and I have to evaluate you based on time, and I have also to see your speed, because when you are calculating speed, you have to understand that you look at the distance, and also time. Look at the distance and also time. And one of the questions that you need to ask yourself is that when we are comparing distance and time in terms of the progress, especially in line with mineral beneficiation, where are we? So it's 35 minutes past the hour of 7, and you are listening to Early Morning Scoop with me, David Shombe. And you can still engage us in the studio. We are speaking about the approaching of G20. We are speaking about, you know, the neighbor hosting an event, or there is a wedding in the neighbor's house. And what are our gains? What are our gains? And also South Africa being closer, because remember, it's not the first time South Africa is hosting such events of that magnitude. South Africa has proven itself to host international events. It's even a country in the world, I mean in Africa, which hosted, I think it's the only country in Africa which hosted the World Cup for the first time. But there were also direct benefits. What are some of the benefits that we are going to get from that summit? You can still engage us at 083-288-401-083-288-401.
Back your preconceptions of technology. Explore the apps that are redefining the future. Out with the old and in with the new. From carrying physical hard copy hymn books to the world of digital hymn book versions. See the bold new expressions of the Imba app. Feel like you're part of something bigger. Experience the digital hymn book in the palm of your hands. Behold, the new and improved Imba that brings together various hymn books under one app. Here to unite a nation and spread the gospel. Some of the featured hymn books on Imba app are The Elsie Nehangano, The Osherero Omaimburiro, The Catholic Simane Kakarunga, The Afrikaans Sing Voor Diere, and many more. Contact us today if you'd like for your church hymn book to be added onto the list of Imba hymn books. 081-23-58-063. You can also email us at digital@omalighty.com. Download and discover Imba today. You can find it on the App Store as well as the Google Play Store.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile. Oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi ninawa. Nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendike nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu oma felane Eagle FM.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have the capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the only person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not pick up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Yeah, we are moving forward with a morning scoop. And today we are looking at the G20, that will happen in November. And that is not only a month from today. This, what is going to happen in South Africa, especially the meeting of more advanced, countries, the meeting of advanced and emerging economies and global power players. And when you look at South Africa is going to host. His parent, which is Africa. He's going to host his parent, which is Africa. Africa have to come to South Africa. That point being a chair. And, we are yet to see that, how are they going to harness that, how are they going to use that opportunity also to strengthen, global, relations and direction. Because when you look at, what happened in 2024, in Brazil, the G20. This, there were some adoption of, you know, refocus on key areas such as hunger and poverty. The Global Alliance on Hunger and Poverty, it was launched, in support of food security, food security and also eradication of poverty. And these are quite very beautiful words. We are not only hearing them for the first time, but what really happened? What are some of the progress? And we also have to see and compare what was said, what was stated, and what is being done. And also when that is being done, because it's not only South Africa who is there, it's also African Union, and it's also we are also part of that. And the issues of reforming of global governance is also going to be discussed. So, reforming global governance is also going to be discussed, especially looking at that aspect. And yeah, there's also issues of peace and security. The supporting of two state solutions, especially between Gaza and Israel, and also sustainable finance on carbon markets. Sustainable finance leaders discussed the importance of mobilizing finance for just energy transition, enhancing their integrity and transparency of carbon market. And what is very interesting here is the digital economy, and also effort of harnessing critical minerals for inclusive and sustainable development. Now, when it comes to some of the resolution on digital economy, let's come to the resolution of digital economy. You may be able also to ask yourself to say, when these things are going to be discussed, because these are things which are affecting the first and the second world country, the advanced and the new emerging economy. These are things which are affecting these countries. In terms of Namibia, how is our digital economy? What is our position in terms of the digital economy? What is our position in terms of leveraging technology or using technology to do business, using technology to make a financial transaction, using technology to invest, using technology also to solve problems and also to create employment and make life easier? Because when you speak about digital economy, you cannot exclude financial technology. You cannot exclude also the issues of using of app like Eagle FM app, because that is the digital platform that we are in. That is the way the world is moving into. You cannot also exclude the using of apps such as Imba and many other applications, because where is the world and where is the world going, especially when you look at the digital economy? Those were some of the resolutions, some of the key focus which were, you know, discussed beforehand in Brazil, and we had to see what will happen in South Africa, and also to see that when the US is coming to South Africa, what will be their position? What will be their position in all the discussion? How is the future of the world looking like? And also Namibia, to be only at the edge. What is that we can get from this summit? And how prepared are we to make sure that we don't only just learn, but we move with time, and we also solve our issues, because the world is not going to wait for us. The world is not going to wait for us, because remember, a meeting is not an action. And yesterday we spoke about the issues of overplanning. We spoke about the issues of overplanning, because if you take the agenda of Shanghai Cooperation on Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit. Then you take the agenda of Forum of Africa-China Cooperation. Then you take the agenda of Tokyo International Cooperation on African Development. Then you take the center or the agenda of UNGA. Then you take the agenda of SADC Summit. Then you take the presented agenda of, you know, a G20. Then you look at the agenda of BRICS. It's actually almost similar agenda, similar discussions. It's almost similar discussion. It's climate, global financing, global governance, digital economy, mineral beneficiations, value addition. Other countries are doing very well in terms of that when they discuss. When they enter those, you know, when they enter those discussions, they are doing very well. But the question is that what African countries are doing? What is the connection between all those summits, all those who attended, and progress in their countries? In Africa, the context of value addition, especially to mineral resources, is ending at the meeting and the discussions. But when you look at the people who add values, for example, when you look at what Dangote is doing, is among the few Africans who are taking resources to another extent of value addition, another extent of competing in a global market. But other than that, we are still discussing. We are still at raw materials. We are still discussing. We are still have a little to no progress in terms of value addition. We discuss, we go home, and business continue as it has been. But is it not now to be a right time to say, let us just stop discussing and ask questions and go into the field to say, in 2020, we spoke about value addition. Where are we now? What is the progress? Have we learned or not? In 2021, there were mobilization of funds. Funds were mobilized. Were these funds used correctly? Where is value addition? We spoke about digital economy. How many of Namibian people are at the digital platform? Even if the majority are at the digital platform, how many are part of financial inclusivity? How many are part of financial inclusivity? Because financial inclusive, whether we do not want to admit, is the future, especially in the context of financial technology. That is where the world is going. The world is moving toward advancing of technology. And these issues of using documents and papers, believe me, it's not going to be necessary anymore. It's not going to be necessary anymore. The issues of papers, printing, people who are in the business of printing, and I'm saying this with much respect, we must find a creative way to do things, because the world is moving toward digitalizing, you know, information. And everybody's going to move digital. And when everybody's going to move digital, what is the impact of our inequality in including everybody in that digital platform? Because when everybody started moving digital, the economic inequality of Namibia have exposed us to that extent that although everybody have a smartphone, not everyone is connected to the internet. Although everybody has internet, not everybody can be included in terms of financial inclusivity, because finance also needed for you to be part of financial inclusive. Although everybody has a phone, you can download for example, an app for a bank. But when you are downloading that app, how much money do you have? What are you transacting? Nothing. That's why there are different initiatives on financial inclusivity which are brought about, but the deep inequality that we have is still going to be a barrier in that sector. So now, looking at all this summit, looking at the G20, and looking at the relationships that we have built so much with the whole world, how do we deal, what is going to define us is that, how are we dealing with our internal challenges? How are we dealing with our internal challenges as a country? Especially when it comes to inequality, how are we dealing with our internal challenges? And who's responsible is that for us to deal with our internal challenges? Because at the end of the day, it's always about whose role is to do what, when, and where. Because when you speak about development, you speak about we want a road to be constructed. We want a school in Dama to be constructed within few months. We want, youth businesses to be out there. We want this youth fund to be used properly, especially looking at the fact that not even more than 20 million was used of 257 million actually. And we are keeping record on that. And we need to make sure that we calculate every dollar that is coming out from that 257 million. Because, you know, when we are not used to that big amount of money being presented to young people, you always end up thinking that it's 1,000. But it's more than 250 million. And when you are speaking, for example, of issues of accountability, who is going to be responsible in asking those questions to say, okay, spiral face, it's not even more than 20 million which was used, where are the others? And I want everybody to, especially the youth, people of my generation, to make sure that we stop this thing of not only blaming, but let us take our calculator and calculate to say, in the coffers, how much these businesses were given, how much, and where is the money now? Because if we keep that track record, it's also going to keep those who are in charge of distributing the resources which are intended to us, to make sure that they are also focusing properly. Because if it's 250 million, we understand basic mathematics, let us track that record. And also without going around and also ask questions. You have numbers, you have names of those businesses, you have targets that are there. Let us also, at the end of the day, at the end of 2 years or so, let us sit down and also do an evaluation and check properly to say, this business was given 2 million. This was the target. What is the progress of that business? Or the government availed 250. Oh, there is 257 million. This is the amount. Where are the other money? Because that is a youth fund. And if you are not doing those things and calculate and keep everybody in check, it's easy for, I'm not saying the money is going to disappear. I'm not saying that, but it's easy for those who are in charge of handling these funds, not to be, looking at that objective and also supporting fully or being committed fully to achieving of that objective of national development, especially in the aspect of the youth. Because if you are not accountable, who is going to be accountable for our resources? Who is going to be accountable for our resources? I'm always telling people to say, whatever coins I have, whichever state I'm into, I know where every dollar is, because that is my wealth. I know where every money is, and I know where I have misused my money. And I know whatever coins you have, make sure that we take care of that resources. That is why, coming to the conclusion of our conversation, it's very important to discuss that, whatever we are going through, or whatever you are going through, it doesn't mean that the world is going to stop to say, no, David, there's a problem. I'm not going to end. I'm not going to bring another chaos into that, because the world has always been like that. It has not been fair. Whatever we are planning to do, we must do it, first, clearly, with good intention, because when you look at, G20, summit agenda, when you look at all the other agendas, there is always also emerging challenges which need to be addressed. And it has been like that. That's why we are always indicating to say, whatever challenge we are dealing with at the local level, at the regional level, we must put in mind to say, if we are not addressing that within a given time, if we are not addressing that within a given time, another challenge would still come in. And we'll be forced to abandon the project, divert the project, or having a thousand of standing white elephants project. And there is nothing which demoralizes citizens and a standing white elephant project, an incomplete building, an incomplete road, an incomplete projects, and abandon equipment in the field of a green scheme. There's nothing which demoralizes citizens. How are they going to, what is the sustainability of project, and who should keep in touch of those, project? And we are looking at that. We are looking at that. And also, just before we come to the end of our conversation, just before we give the mic to Mike to unpack the day, we have a few seconds. It's quite very important to look at the Villager newspaper. It's quite very important to look at the Villager newspaper, and don't only just read. We must also share. We must share the ideas. We must comment, and also give your perspective, because that is how we interact with each other. Because I do not think when you are commenting on a page, people are not reading. Sometimes you can give advice, sometimes you can give input. And I also like the fact that especially Tate Kauruma gave his number out there, that sometimes you have information, you have insight on economic matters. Sharing of ideas is the reason we are here, to educate each other. And you either calling in or calling the office, especially with economic data, that will be even more variable, especially with new economic insight. That will even be more variable. That's why we are saying education can come both ways. It's not only from this end, but from you too, because what you say, the way you comment, if you really have something genuine, especially on the paper, especially on issues being presented out there, don't just comment and say, no, it's a good post, or it's not a good post, but at least give your views. And it's a digital platform. That is how we discuss. And and I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Mike Oshoveri to unpack the day. And from me, David Shombe, bye-bye for now. And see you around.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today.